to get over here. I sure wish I could give you one more kiss. And war was just a game we played when we were kids. Well, I'm laying down my gun, I'm hanging up my boots. I'm up here with God and we're both watching over you.
Memorial Day weekend in north central Wisconsin marks the unofficial start of summer. It's the weekend to break out the grill, head to the cabin, collect candy at a parade, or throw a family party. It's a time for getting together with friends and spending time outdoors. But of course, Memorial Day is so much more than that. This holiday, more than any other American holiday, is a time for somber reflection. It's a time to remember the tens of thousands of people who have served our country over the centuries and have given their lives in the process. The holiday has its roots in the days following the Civil War, our nation's most deadly conflict. In May 1868, the head of an organization of Union veterans, the Grand Army of the Republic, established Decoration Day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the war dead with flowers, honoring their memory. And in 1971, Memorial Day was declared through an act of Congress, becoming a national holiday. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert. Today, on the cusp of Memorial Day weekend, we welcome two guests to help us understand the history and significance of this very special holiday and hear the stories of the men and women who not only served, but gave their lives. First, I'd like to welcome Chris Kolakowski, the director of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're also joined today by Annette Langlois-Grunseth. She is a poet who grew up in Wausau and recently published a book that shares letters written by her brother Peter during his time serving in the Vietnam War. She'll share some of Peter's words and her own poetry and talk about how Peter's experience affected her and the other members of their family a little later in the program. Annette, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here today.
Your questions are welcome. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742 or email us at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. Chris, I'd like to start with you. Tell us a little bit about the Wisconsin Veterans Museum to start off with. What's its mission? What's your role in that?
Great question. The Wisconsin Veterans Museum is in downtown Madison, and we've been around since 1901. And our mission is very simple, to preserve, interpret, and affirm the role of Wisconsin veterans in the United States military from 1861, basically the Civil War, all the way up to the present day. So it's a long tradition that we've had, but it's also it's a continuing mission that quite frankly will never end. And we're dedicated to Wisconsin veterans, even though we're based in Madison, all over the state as well.
And Chris, we talked just briefly a moment ago about the history of Memorial Day, but tell us more about when it started and how it's evolved over the years.
Memorial Day, the year 1868 is significant because it's just a few years after the Civil War, where we had the largest armed force that had ever been fielded up to that time. Over 2 million served in the United States Army during the time of the United States Armed Forces, Army and Navy. And 2% of the United States population had been killed in the war, which is, depending on who you consult, anywhere from 632,000 up to 750,000. That may not sound like a lot, but 2% of the U.S. population today would be 3.4 million dead, to say nothing of those maimed, nothing of those who came home with post-traumatic stress, all kinds of things like that. So there's an entire generation of Americans that have just been maimed, and there's been a tremendous sacrifice to keep the Union together earlier in the decade. And so it was kind of a national movement that the Grand Army of the Republic got out front of in some ways expressed by creating this day for nationally for us to remember the sacrifices of those in the Civil War. And then, of course, they'll add later conflicts as the year go on. But that's where it comes from, this idea that we as a nation need to stop and realize what great sacrifices have been made for us so that we can enjoy the freedoms and the prosperity that we enjoy today.
I know one of the roles of the museum is really keeping that history alive, keeping those memories alive. Mm-hmm. And I was struck by the oral history program that you have that really preserves the veterans' stories. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. How did that get started, and how does that tie into your mission?
That started about 20 years ago in conjunction with the University of Wisconsin. And today it's grown to over 2,600 oral histories. We have veterans from the Spanish-American War all the way to the present that have given their oral histories. It's one of the largest programs in the entire country. We're in the top 10 for oral history programs in the country. And oral history is a document, just like written history, just like photographs, just like artifacts. And it can be very, very powerful when you have a veteran talking about their experiences in the service, whether peacetime or in wartime. And you can hear the voice. Sometimes if it's on video, you can see the reaction. It can be a very powerful way to really establish a personal connection with these veterans that are sharing their story. And it's just another tool of our way to preserve these stories for generations in the future.
And Annette, we're going to be talking much more about your book and your brother's letters from Vietnam a little bit later in the program. But I have to wonder, as the sister of a war veteran, what are your thoughts on the importance of this kind of program, the oral history program? How important is it that these stories are passed on?
Oh, I think it is very important. I think especially the oral histories, when you hear the emotion in the voices of the people telling their stories, that's a whole different thing than even reading it in print. I think it's something that the more we can do that, we can understand and not repeat the mistakes that were made in previous wars.
Right now, the museum is still closed, is it not, Chris?
It is. We're going to be opening right around Independence Day in about a week or so. We're going to formally open our plans or announce our plans.
Wonderful. I know that you're still reaching the public, though. You've got these traveling exhibits. One that the Wisconsin Remembers is a joint project between the museum, Wisconsin Public Radio, and Wisconsin Public Television. Tell us a little bit about that.
Wisconsin Remembers is a way to use the oral and the video history, or the video histories that we've done, get these stories out there. Some of which through Wisconsin Public Media, through television and radio, put both of us together with a lot of the same shared resources and get it out as far and wide as we can in the state. This is the tradition of service in Wisconsin is something that permeates the state, this tradition of service to yourself. And it's something that all Wisconsinites should remember and appreciate. And so by helping to get those stories out there, I can't speak too highly about the partnership that we have.
How do you decide where the exhibit will go and where is it right now?
Short answer is by request. We book them as we go. Right now, actually, I think it's in Madison because with COVID, there's been a lot of places have been closed. Their schedules have been messed up. But I know so we haven't gotten a lot of requests, but I do know it's going to go out again very soon.
And is the World War II traveling exhibit something separate?
It is. We have several traveling exhibits that are going around. For your listeners, if up near in the high ground, when they just reopened, they took our I Am Not Invisible exhibit up there, which showcases women veterans, particularly from the last 30 or 40 years. So they're starting to get out there more and more. And we work with local partners all across the state and even some outside the state. To get those out there. It's great promotion for us, and it's a great way to help them tell stories.
A little bit later on in the program, we'll talk about some of the ways that people can commemorate the holiday at home. I know that the Veterans Museum has some great information there. But one thing that caught my eye is the downloadable guide for making poppies at home. Can you explain how poppies are a symbol of Memorial Day? I'm not sure everybody knows that.
you're right. A lot of people don't, and I wish they did. So I'm glad you asked the question. It comes primarily from the 1915 poem In Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow through the crosses row on row. And then it goes on, and it's about the dead of World War One. And they talk about, to you from failing hands, we pass the torch. And so that imagery made the poppy a symbol of remembrance. And so one of the things, if you go on the virtual Memorial Day website, you'll see a way to make your own poppies at home, and you can inscribe them with names of veterans or names of the fallen. And it's a way to connect with the symbolism, but also the importance of this day.
Thank you for explaining that. And I do want to mention that the Wisconsin Remembers exhibit is at the High Ground now, and you can find more information at WPR.org/veterans. Does the museum work with Gold Star families? I have to wonder, this holiday has to be so emotional for the families of those who did not come home. How do you work with the Gold Star families?
We work with Gold Star families partly through working with them to make sure that their loved ones' memories are preserved, either through documents, through artifacts. We have a lot in our collection of veterans that did not come home, and some of whom are buried overseas still. We also work with them at our various events and honoring them at our various events. For example, the Memorial Day services we always support through the Department of Veterans Affairs, to cite just one example. But there are others that we do, and we do different programming throughout the year that show, you know, that tell the story and make sure that their loved ones and the story of these veterans, no matter who they are, no matter what their fate was, are remembered and appreciated.
Annette, your brother did come home from Vietnam, but he is one of the many soldiers who died much later for reasons connected to the war. In your brother's case, we're talking about exposure to Agent Orange, yes?
Yes, that's right.
And what does Memorial Day mean to you as someone who lost a brother, perhaps belatedly, but you still lost him to the war?
Oh, it's a very a deeply personal time that we remember my brother, and I remember all the veterans in our family because my father served, my grandfather, my mother was in the military, and her brother. So we have a lot of remembering that we do, and we take care to keep their memory alive.
Chris, there is such a tremendous amount of community pride for Memorial Day, and some of that pride really relies on making sure the true meaning of the day is understood. What do you wish more people knew and understood about Memorial Day? What should people understand?
The big thing that I would encourage is people to understand the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Veterans Day honors all who served. Mm-hmm. Memorial Day honors those who served but didn't come home. And that is a very important distinction. And you'll see that. I've got veteran friends who say, don't thank me for my service. Remember those who didn't come back. And that's what the point of this day is. And yes, it's about barbecue. Yes, it's about getting out on the water. Yes, it's about enjoying yourself. But people should always remember why this holiday is here and what it's really all about.
You're listening to Chris Kolakowski of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum and poet Annette Langlois-Grunseth, our guests today on Route 51, sharing their thoughts on Memorial Day, along with the stories of the soldiers who served and never came home. When we return, we'll hear about Annette's brother, Peter, who served in the Vietnam War and wrote dozens of letters about home back home dealing his experience. Peter initially survived the war, but his death years later was attributed to his exposure to Agent Orange. Your questions for our guests are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I never thought that this is where I'd settle down. I thought I'd die an old man back in my hometown. They gave me this plot of land, me and some other men, for a job well done. There's a big White House. It's on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, we're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington.
On Route 51. I'm Shireen Seewert. Annette Langley-Grunseth and Chris Kolakowski are our guests today as we commemorate the Memorial Day holiday, a day we honor the men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice in serving our country. We'd like to hear from you, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, be sure to leave enough time for our producer to answer your call. Annette, take me back in time. The day your brother's draft number was chosen. Tell me what happened.
Oh, gosh. He was graduating from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in June of 1967. He was just coming off of a year of lots of campus protest at UW-Madison. The Dow Chemical protest, anti-war protests were at their peak. Tet had just happened in Vietnam, where the major invasion occurred of South Vietnamese cities and attacks against U.S. soldiers. And my brother was classified 1A upon graduation, June 1967. And he went off in the summer on a canoe trip. And he canoed across Canada with his best friend, and we wondered, is he going to come home? And he did. His sense of duty and citizenship won out. He went off to basic training in the fall of 67, and he was prepared, basic training and then advanced infantry training, and everybody was being prepared for Vietnam. He knew that. And I was coming up on the spring of 68. I was graduating from high school. We had a turbulent summer politically in the news as well as at home. My grandmother died. I graduated from high school. Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. had just been assassinated. And off he goes to Vietnam in July. And he arrives. His draft number was a real low number, so he didn't really have much choice. He went, and he arrives in Vietnam the day before his 23rd birthday.
A lot going on, a lot to process.
It was. My mother was really kind of hysterical because her brother had been in World War II and was missing in action and never came home. So the day we said goodbye to my brother, I think my mother cried for a week because she thought, I'm not going to see him again. And that's what we kind of all thought.
When those letters started coming home, when Peter started to write about his experiences, what did it mean to you and your family to receive those letters in that time, in that moment?
Oh, it was like Christmas when a letter arrived in the mailbox because we knew he was still alive and he was a very good writer, being a journalism major. And he started writing these really good letters that actually were telling stories that were a little more raw and different than what we were getting in the national news.
And some of those letters were published in the local newspaper in Wausau. How did that come about?
Well, my father, at the time, that was the Wausau Record Herald, and Frank Plano was the editor, and my dad knew him. He was a friend, and he said, hey, I got these letters. And Frank looked at them, and he said, oh, my goodness. He said, would you mind if we put them in the newspaper? He said, I'm taking a big risk here because they are different reports than some of the things we're hearing in the news. Would you mind? So they put a letter in the paper. And my brother at the time didn't know they were going in the paper, but very shortly was told that from my parents. So then he was writing, I think, knowing they were going to be in the paper. In fact, one of his letters, he talked about what happened as a result of a bombing halt where they just got ambushed and got their butts kicked. And he said, that's what's happening. Whatever is happening at home with the talks, it's not working for us in Vietnam. And then he wrote as a P.S. in the letter, I think this one should go in the paper so people understand what's really happening.
So he knew that those papers, that they were being published.
Then he knew. He knew. And eventually, the newspaper, another good friend of ours, Wynn Freund, who was a reporter for the paper and well-known in Wausau, had arranged to send copies to my brother in Vietnam. And when they arrived, my brother wrote letters back saying how much the veteran or the how much the GIs appreciated seeing these letters. And he sent photos home, and there was a double truck photo spread in the paper. And it was giving them some recognition for what they were doing, because I don't think they felt that it was worthwhile, the effort that they were going through in Vietnam.
So it had a very positive impact on those soldiers. How did Wausau respond to the letters? How did the community react?
Oh, it was very interesting. My parents would get, an article would appear, and then they'd start getting phone calls. And they were getting phone calls from other parents in Wausau who had sons and daughters that were in Vietnam. And they were great to hear what Peter's experiencing. It gives us a picture of what's happening.
During the Vietnam War, it was a very tumultuous time in our history, as you said. So much was happening, and I have to wonder, you know, Chris, when you talk with veterans or Gold Star families today, is there any frustration that official news coverage during the Vietnam War was so different from what the soldiers were experiencing? It sounds like Annette's brother felt that way, that frustration that, hey, the real story isn't being told. Have you heard that as well?
I have, and I've some people have even gone so far to say they felt like they were lied to by the government and by the media, particularly in 68 Tet. That's one of the reasons it's such a turning point, is because there's been rosy predictions. You know, the end is in sight, the General Westmoreland had said the previous fall, and then all of a sudden here's North Vietnamese forces attacking all over the country, penetrating into the capital of Saigon and into the grounds of the U.S. Embassy. You know, from the modern term being optics, from an optics perspective, you know, it's like they're telling me one thing, but my eyes are telling me something else here over the TV. And I would just like to point out just an interesting sort of congruence over the generations. Civil War soldiers did the same thing. They'd write home in their local papers, would print their perspectives from the battlefield. And sometimes there'd be that difference in what was being said from the official line versus what they're hearing from the front.
You're listening to Wisconsin Veterans Museum Director Chris Kolakowski and Annette Langlois-Grunseth, the Wisconsin poet who published a book of letters written by her brother, who served in Vietnam and died years later. They are our guests today on Route 51 as we head into the Memorial Day weekend and remember the men and women who gave their lives while serving our country. Your thoughts and questions are welcome. You can call us at 800-780-9742 or email us at route51@wpr.org. And at your book, Combat and Campus, Writing Through War, features not only your brother's letters, but your own poetry. Tell us about how the project started. Why did you start it, and what are you hoping to convey?
Well, I started this project about 20 years ago. Actually, it was something always talked about in our family, to publish my brother's letters. He didn't want to revisit them or reread them much, but my parents kept them in the safe deposit box. That was a signal to me, this is important. And my mother's dying wish was, please publish his letters. So I got them together, and my husband helped type them up, and it was a manuscript of about 58 pages. I showed it to a publisher, and they said, well, what about your story? Because they knew I was a freshman on campus 2 months after my brother went to Vietnam, and I was at, guess where, University of Wisconsin-Madison, in the epicenter of protest and National Guard marching up Bascom Hill. So I started putting together my parts of the book, and I'm a poet, so I started writing poetry, and probably for the last 10 or 15 years, I would send them out, and I've gotten a number of the poems published, and I thought, well, I'll add these to the book, and I kept growing, and I kept working on it, and then I'd set it aside thinking, do I really want to put our family story out there? And then I thought, no, it's really important. My brother passed away in 2004, and that's when I really thought I need to do something with it. He didn't want to publish the letters, so I felt that once he was gone, I was able to do that, and I just started working on it. And then I have a very interesting story of how it came to be published, and it was my brother had gone to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in 1998, and there were several people that he was very close to in Vietnam that were killed, and he went to the wall and did rubbings of their names. And he has a photo album. He took a lot of pictures, and tucked in the back of his photo album, which had been lost for years and I finally found, there was a slip of paper from when he was at the Vietnam Wall, 1998. One of the top name on the list was Captain Dave Crocker. And that was the commanding officer that was in his unit. That was very highly regarded. He was a West Point grad, a tremendous leader, and a tremendous person, and he was killed. That tore my brother apart. That was one of the things that really aggravated his post-traumatic stress when he got home. So I found this slip of paper, Googled the name, and up comes David Crocker, but also comes up the name of his wife, Ruth Crocker. And guess what? She's a book publisher. And she also had written a book about her husband in Vietnam when he was killed, and hers is called Those Who Remain, Remembrance and Reunion After War. Well, I contacted her, and about 10 minutes later got an email back, and that was a couple years ago. So we've been talking back and forth, and I thought, well, should I publish this book or not? And she said, well, you know, I could publish that book. Let's do it. So she did. Elma Grove Press, and she's out in Mystic, Connecticut, published it, and she does other books. So she has it offered, and we've become good friends. And then she connected me with people that she coincidentally met from the unit from my brother's 22nd Infantry. So the book has been out for a week and a half, and I have been hearing from some of these veterans. And I'm just blown away. One veteran said that he read my brother's letters, and he said, I've taken 50 years to try and get closure for some of the battles. And he said, well, the battle on page 68 is one that I was in. And then he sent me a photo from it. I was just amazed. And he said he's finally been able to put some closure to his trauma and experiences because of my brother's letters. So I feel good that this book can do some good work for veterans.
I read the book. I had a hard time reading the book because it's so emotional. And I felt like the tone of Peter's letters changed over time. He became more and more disillusioned, perhaps, with what was happening there. He talks about what he calls a horror show. He talks about his job identifying the bodies of soldiers in his own company. Annette, when you reflect on what he'd written during his tour, what stands out to you the most?
Oh, the incredible trauma he experienced. How can somebody, he's out on the field for 4 months where they're just getting ambushed and they're living in these tracks. I think his Boy Scout skills saved him because he knew how to survive kind of in wilderness. They're in these horrible conditions. Then he gets called in to be company clerk, and he says, oh, I'm so relieved. I'm a chairborne ranger now. And what happens is he's now identifying the bodies of his buddies that are killed. and he's having to write the letters home and gather the personal effects. Well, that just changes you. And then just before he came home, just a few weeks, he had two buddies that were sleeping in a bunker above ground because it was a hot, steamy night. And he said, no, I'm going to sleep below ground in the bunker next to him. Well, a mortar went into that bunker. Those men didn't come home, and he did. He was injured, but he came home. And I don't think he ever got over that kind of trauma. When you see somebody right next to you that was your friend, 1 minute, and the next minute, death comes so quick. And that was something that changed him forever and changed all of us when he came home. He was a different person.
Chris, I'd like to share a passage from one of Peter's letters. In it, he writes, every time I've been involved in a full-scale firefight, every time I've seen a fellow GI die, I've prayed and asked for God's mercy for them as well as myself. Chris, in your experience, what do you hear from veterans about the ways they're affected by the loss of the soldiers around them, like what Annette just described?
Actually, I think that description is pretty fair. I've seen it from the officer NCO perspective. You know, I didn't bring all my people home, and there's a certain amount of responsibility for that. You've got a sense of that with the connection Annette mentioned with the he had with his commanding officer getting killed, Captain Crocker. But also the randomness of, there's a lot of survivor guilt for the randomness of what happens. Sometimes if you step left instead of right, you know, and there's no predictability to it. It affects everybody. Once you've heard a shot in anger, it affects you. You're changed forever. That's a consistent message I get from veterans.
This year, our nation marks the 30th anniversary of Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm. Hard to believe that 30 years has gone by.
I know, right?
Yes. It's amazing.
And yes, and the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on 9/11. I remember a hero's welcome for the soldiers returning from those wars. But Annette, your brother's experience coming home from Vietnam was very different. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he had the most unwelcome home. All of our Vietnam veterans did. And he, in fact, came home one day, he's in Vietnam, and the next day, bam, he's in Wausau, Wisconsin, and it's summer, and he came home in July, and there are fireworks going off, and he literally hit the floor under the dining room table when he heard somebody shoot off some fireworks. And he was home, and he went back to UW-Madison to grad school, and he was just treated horribly. People spit at him. They called him, how many people did you kill? They stole things from him in his room where he lived. And he, after that first semester of grad school, said, I can't do this. And he came home and he became news anchor at WAOW Channel 9 in Wausau. And then he's actually reporting on some of the news of Vietnam for where he just came home. And I think he tried to put it behind him and try to forget about it. But he was so angry about the lack of a welcome home and how people shouted terrible things at him.
Chris Kolakowski of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum and poet Annette Langlois-Grunseth are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on the Memorial Day holiday and the stories of the brave men and women who paid the ultimate price for their service to this country. Your questions are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
A shiny town car parked on that old gravel lot. Two uniforms on the front door, they knocked. His mama started crying. She said, you were lying. Where's my son? So I'll take off my hat, raise up my drink to the ones that give it all for the U.S. of A. Say a prayer for the families. Lord, give them strength. There's a folded flag in a frame. And I just want to say thanks on Memorial Day.
Thank you.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewart. Annette Langlois-Gruseth and Chris Kolakowski are our guests today as we enter the Memorial Day holiday weekend, a time to honor the men and women of the military who paid the ultimate price for their service. We'd like to hear from you, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, be sure to leave enough time for our producer to answer your call. Chris, we've just spent some time hearing about Peter's experience and what he shared in his letters. The Wisconsin Veterans Museum has a motto, "Every veteran is a story." Can you explain what that means?
In one sense, a very simple phrase, but also it's a very complicated phrase. At the end of the day, what it boils down to for us is no matter when you serve, no matter what service you were in, if you wore the uniform, you have a unique experience and a unique perspective on what it means to serve this country, what your experiences were, the times you were in, things like that. And your story has value, and we want to make sure it is included in our museum.
And Chris, you've heard so many stories of fallen service members. Can you share some of those with us?
I actually went into our collection and I picked out about a half dozen, four of which are from the region where your listeners are.
Okay.
I'll tackle them chronologically, if you don't mind. I centered on World War II forward. One of the first ones I would mention is the Barber brothers, who are out of New London. And many people who are familiar with World War II probably are familiar with the five Sullivan brothers from Iowa who all served together in the Navy and all were sunk together in 1942 and all lost their lives. Well, for Wisconsin, the Barbers were the first one. There were three brothers, Leroy, Malcolm, and Randolph. Their fourth brother was too young to join before the war started. All three of them, the Navy gives them permission to serve on the USS Oklahoma, and so they're all there at Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. And if you've seen any of the movies, you're probably aware that the Oklahoma gets torpedoed very quickly, capsizes. Over 400 of the crew are trapped in the hull, most of them bodies not being able to be identified. In fact, it's been a big issue and a big project over the last few years for the Defense Department to disinter those unknowns and try and figure out who they are and complete that final step home. And they found the Barbers were originally buried, all three of them, as unknowns in Honolulu, and they've since identified them and marked their remains at the Punch Bowl. But when you think about a town the size of New London and a family where you have four sons and three of them die within the first hours of the Second World War at Pearl Harbor, you can imagine the impact that that has on a small town. And by the way, the fourth brother, when he was of age, joined the Navy and fought in the Pacific and survived the war. But yeah, the first three Barbers, that sacrifice, that's what Wisconsinites remembered at the beginning of the war. Another one I'd mentioned from the same region, from Glenwood City, is the only Wisconsin female to be killed in the Second World War. She was a nurse named Ellen Ainsworth, who served in the Army and was posted to the Anzio beachhead southwest of Rome, where we'd made a landing to try and flank German lines and gotten bogged down. The entire beachhead was under German shell fire. There was no safe place. And the nurses got the moniker, the field hospitals there got the moniker of the Angels of Anzio, because the hospitals were above ground. And so you can imagine being wounded on the front line and you go back to the hospital. Normally you're out of danger, but not there. And one of the things that during one of the shellings, she was mortally wounded and died in February of 1944 and is buried over in Italy. Mitchell Red Cloud, I'd mentioned, from Hatfield. He's a Ho-Chunk, served with great distinction in the Marine Corps during the Second World War on Guadalcanal and Okinawa. And then after the war, probably as much as anything, because it was good, steady employment, joined the Army. And was in Korea, served in all the 1950 battles in Korea until in North Korea. As his men were falling back, he was commanding a squad. As his men were falling back, he got wounded, decided to cover them and kind of try and help and hold the line himself so that they could reorganize and try and hold the position. At the same time, while he's wounded, he's gripping a tree with one hand to stay upright and shooting at the North Koreans and the Chinese with his other hand, dies on the battlefield. But that sacrifice and heroism earned him the Medal of Honor. And we have his Medal of Honor on display at the Veterans Museum and tell his story there. And then the last one, you're talking about 30 years ago, Desert Storm, Desert Shield. One of the big pushes that we're making this year is trying to showcase or trying to especially focus on veterans and dead from Desert Storm all the way up through 9/11. And there's a Wisconsinite. Many of you have probably seen the movie Black Hawk Down or have read the book Black Hawk Down. Many people may not realize that one of the 12 dead from Mogadishu was from Portage, Sergeant Daniel Bush. And he was killed on the 3rd of October, 1993, and is buried in Portage. As a matter of fact, one of the roads leading out of Portage to the west is named in his honor, as is a highway up near Hatfield for Mitchell Red Cloud. So these are all stories connected to Central Wisconsin. These are, if anybody's looking for a reason to commemorate Memorial Day with a Central Wisconsin tie, those are just four stories right there. And obviously a part of the landscape even today in Central Wisconsin.
When you hear these stories, they're so devastating. What lifts you up? What gives you optimism?
There's a great quote from the battlefield of Kohima in World War II. When you go home, tell them of us and say, for your tomorrow, we gave our today. And that's one of the ways I draw that what you're talking about is they gave their today for us. And this is that tomorrow. And we need to do the best we can. We need to remember them. But one of the best ways we can honor their legacy is to take care of this state, take care of this community, take care of this country, and take the most advantage we can of what they died to preserve and to gain for us.
Chris, the Veterans Museum has a dedicated page. There are some great suggestions for commemorating Memorial Day at home. We talked about the downloadable guide for making poppies. Briefly, what other resources are there to help us mark the day?
We've got a video tribute there to Sergeant Bush and all those others who were killed between January of 1991 and 9/11/2001. There's going to be a virtual Memorial Day ceremony on Monday. We've got some lesson plans for kids. If you want to explain to, draw an American flag, write names of killed in action on it, whoever you want to honor. There's a lot of different things so that you can do a lot of bring Memorial Day home. But also, if you want to engage with what the state's doing in terms of virtual things, you can do that too. So it's kind of a good menu of options to help people both appreciate but also commemorate this important holiday.
And where can people find that information, Chris?
That is wisvetsmemorialday.com, WISVETS, Memorial Day, all one word, .com.
And we will also place that link on our website, WPR.org/Route 51. Annette, the book is Combat and Campus Writing Through War. You share not only your brother's letters, but you share some powerful poetry that really speaks to how you experienced this time and what those letters and that time meant to you. As we close our program today, I'd like to invite you to share a poem that concludes your book. The poem is called On Behalf of a Grateful Nation.
Oh, thank you. And this poem really speaks to one of the lyrics I heard in your music, which was kind of undoing me as I was listening to it. Very powerful music. And if people want to know more about my brother's experiences, I have information on my website also. It's AnnetteGrunseth.com, all lowercase, AnnetteGrunseth.com. So here is the poem that speaks to some of those lyrics we heard. On behalf of a grateful nation, one for my grandfather, one for my uncle, one for my brother, one for my mother, one for my dad, tightly folded into 13 triangles, fabric snapped, folded in precision, hand over hand, stars for our states face outward, stripes of the original 13 concealed inside. White gloved hands extended, on behalf of a grateful nation, I never heard what was next. Emotion overtaking the undertaken, thanked for their service, their sacrifice. Constellations confined inside isosceles of glass and oak, three-cornered, shadow-boxed, each grief contained.
Thank you very much. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Chris Kolakowski from the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, and Annette Langlois-Grunseth, whose book can be found at annettegrunseth.com. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer today is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Special music today from Tim McGraw, Trace Adkins, Sarah McLaughlin, Coffey Anderson, Ray Charles, and Home Free featuring Lee Greenwood and the U.S. Air Force Chorus. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route51. Next week, tune in for a discussion on camping in the Northwoods. And in 2 weeks, we'll take a look at local farmers markets with plenty of tips on how to make the most of locally produced foods this summer. If you have an idea for a program, email us at route51.wpr.org. Until then, we're heading out of town.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
There ain't